Good morning, witches. This is the Witch Daily Show, coming to you from New Orleans, with host Tanya Brown. Our episodes span about 20 minutes long to give you just a little pop of magic. So, tune in, take a deep breath, and enjoy.
Good morning. It is January 19th, 2023. It is Thursday. I am Tanya, and this is the Witch Daily Show. Today's episode is brought to you by Glass Garden Apothecary. So let's get your day going with a little magic. Our quote of the day is, "Sometimes our fate resembles a fruit tree in winter. Who would think that those branches would turn green again and blossom? But we hope it, and we know it." By Johann Wolfgang von Goethe. What a name. So what are we drinking today? We are drinking Glass Garden Apothecary's Period Peace Tea, which is a tea to help with PMS symptoms, cramping, things like that. We've already talked about red clover and willow's bark, so today we're talking about willow's mantle. This comes to us from themaniacnami.tumblr.com. So often, ladies' mantle is brewed into teas used to help relieve the pain, cramping, and bloating caused by periods. It is also commonly utilized by women facing and experiencing menopause to lessen some of the symptoms, such as bleeding, sweating, and soreness. The teas are also drank to help with digestive issues and painful gas, as well as upset stomachs. As a tincture, it is often applied to rashes, swelling, or areas where the muscles are sore to help bring minor relief. So the herb is still used by midwives and women after giving birth to help the uterus heal and regain shape, though it is wildly debated among professionals over whether it actually helps with afterbirth care. And heads up, not for pregnant women. Not for pregnant women. All right, moving into headlines. So, this is actually the second time I've recorded this episode because our original headline was so condescending and just super dude bro-y science. Anyone who believes in anything is primitive. It was just really gross. So I started the whole episode over. I scrapped it. I found a new article. That's nice. And however, I figured I could do something with that audio. So I am going to post my reaction to this super terrible article over on our Patreon. So if you want to hear me just get super offended, I figured maybe the general population doesn't want to hear that. But, you know, if you're on the Patreon and you just want to hear me get all mad, it's there for you. Go check it out. So our new headline is from NOLA.com. Anne Rice's Mayfair Witches. Has that New Orleans magic or just enough of it? So I actually walked by the filming of this house a million times while they were filming. And all the extras were next to my house in little tents. And I would go out there and I'd be like, what are you guys doing? What are you filming? And I would just like bug them to death. I definitely accidentally like walked through a shot and then I had to hurry. I heard action. I'm like, no. And I like ran out of the way with my little shopping bags. Because while the house is maybe like two blocks from my house, I was also house sitting at a house like a block from it. So I was seeing this house a super ton when they were filming here. So this article is written by Mike Scott. They pop up almost exactly 13 minutes into the first episode of AMC's Mayfair Witches, just as two of her characters enter the haunted New Orleans house at the story's center. Four bittersweet words, executive producer Anne Rice. With her death a little more than a year ago, in December 2021, AMC's eight-episode series, inspired by Rice's Lives of the Mayfair Witches book trilogy will stand as one of the last major projects in which the groundbreaking New Orleans novelist had a direct hand, even if briefly. More importantly, she also got to see that the setting into motion of AMC's fulfillment of a stated goal to hers to develop her two favorite literary offspring, The Vampire Chronicles and Lives of the Mayfair Witches, into separate TV series set in the same mystical world. She envisioned something big in the vein of HBO's epic Game of Thrones. Last fall, the first installment in Rice's vision became reality with the arrival of AMC. Ooh, sorry. Last fall, the first installment in Rice's vision became reality with the arrival of AMC's Interview with the Vampire, a 7-episode series based on the first book in her Vampire Chronicles. The arrival this week of Mayfair Witches marks the second installment in what AMC is billing as Anne Rice's Immortal Universe. So that's the sweet part. The bitter? Ooh. Mayfair Witches falls short of fully achieving Rice's goals? That's not to say it doesn't lack for atmosphere. Telling the story of a young woman who stumbles into an otherworldly secret haunting of her New Orleans family for decades, the first 5 episodes provided a review ooze. New Orleans-ness, like a good roast beef po' boy oozes mayonnaise-tinged gravy. But at the same time, it lacks both the narrative momentum and the outsized grandeur of Game of Thrones. Is that the name of Game of Thrones? Yeah, okay. It just felt weird when I saw it. Basically, people are saying it's too soapy, too reliant on outbursts of magnolia-tinged melodrama, weeping strings, and otherworldly whispers. Even its effort at crafting a memorable CG-enhanced opening sequence, suddenly a must-have for any TV series, it feels just shy of ambitious enough. In fact, with its understated effects, hit-or-miss dialogue, and the general obviousness of most of its creative choices, Anne Rice's Mayfair Witches often feels more Disney Channel After Dark than it does HBO. Ooh, that's a sick burn. If I ever made a show and someone said that to me, that would hurt so bad. To be fair, that doesn't mean it isn't watchable and at times even enjoyable, as long as the viewer's expectations are properly moderated. Fair. You'll likely find there's enough meat to the bone to hold their interest. For example, there's Alexandra Daddario, a veteran of New Orleans production scene after notably supporting turns in Percy Jackson and True Detective. She's the lead this time, and she's particularly well cast as Dr. Rowan Fielding, a neurosurgeon who learned that she is the heiress to a Mayfair dynasty, bringing a nice blend of strength and naivety to the table as her character discovers ever more shocking details about her family's past. I'm probably still going to watch it, you know? Probably still going to watch it. It's cute, and I also got to see them filming it, so. All right, witches, I'm going to throw this over to our moon correspondent, and after this break, we will talk more.
Hello to all of my astro friends. This is Serendipity, the Chicago astrologer, coming at you with your daily moon mantra for Thursday, January 19th. The waning crescent moon enjoys the great outdoors in Sagittarius today. Here, the moon squares Jupiter and Neptune. We may be having difficulty staying focused today, as Neptune is clouding up our vision. The square to Jupiter is making it hard to access the bigger picture of what we're trying to accomplish. Overall, today may be slow going. Motivation can be hard to come by under these circumstances. It might be challenging to try to get moving when you have no idea where you're going or why. A good approach to today would be something along the lines of the Hanged Man in Tarot. He is at an impasse, and instead of trying to push forward, he accepts the pause and chooses to invert himself to get a different point of view. So be the Hanged Man today. Accept the pause, invert yourself, and take a moment to consider this different approach to your well-worn path. Your daily moon mantra is, sometimes self-care looks like pressing pause and honestly thinking about what buttons you need to press next. This has been your daily moon mantra with Serendipity, the Chicago astrologer, signing off and reminding you that you are in charge of your own destiny.
Happy New Year! If you're looking to add new healthy habits to your 2023, check out Glass Garden Apothecary. All of our teas and other herbal potions are made to order with all the best intentions stirred right in. Go to glassgardenapothecary.com and Glass Garden Apothecary on YouTube. Josephine Glass can't wait to make your order. And use code WITCH, WITCH, for 10% off in January and February at glassgardenapothecary.com.
All right, we are back. So moving into our question of the day, this comes to us from our Facebook group and listener, let's see, Rachel. Rachel says, what do you do to guard your energy? My daughter is 14. She and I are easily drained when we are around a lot of people, even if we aren't interacting with them much. If we are interacting, it's worse. We both struggle with migraines, for which she takes medication, but I've noticed that she gets them or requires a lot of sleep after being in a crowd. Typically, I ground afterwards by trying to spend time crafting or being with my garden or chickens, but I'm curious how people keep themselves from getting depleted in the first place. Oof. So this could be like twofold. This could be introverts, empaths, or just, I mean, that's it. I think those are the two options. First of all, what is introversion? I feel like it's widely misunderstood. Being an introvert means you have a smaller threshold of stimulation than extroverts. So what this means is you just reach your fill much faster. So people are just overstimulating. You can be around people for 10 minutes and be like, okay, I'm done. I've had enough. This is a lot. Now it's too much. Whereas other people can be around people for days and not reach that level. So there is like the introvert of it all, which for some reason is treated as if it's something to be fixed. I do not understand why. Why can't we just be left alone to be little hermits in our house? I do not know. But then there is also the empathic reasons, which is the idea that you're picking up on other people's energies, and it's like this hyper perception, essentially. And when you're hyper perceiving, you're taking in a lot of information, which again leads to being overstimulated. So let's talk a little bit about this. In different ways that you can shield yourself for which either one, whether you're an introvert or an empath, I think they kind of go hand in hand. So let's go into shielding. This comes to us from findyourgoodspace.com. Shielding strategies for protection. William Bronze, a researcher quoted by McTarget, found it was possible through psychological shielding strategies to block or prevent influences you didn't want. A similar idea to the egg of light, Braun said you could visualize a safe or protective shield or barrier or screen, which would prevent penetration of the influence, like a little cocoon of light that dissipates unwanted energies at its borders. In one of Braun's studies, he asked participants to shield themselves against the influence of two of his experimenters. You can read more about the effects of intention on others, but at the end of the experiment, those who shielded had far fewer physical effects than those who did not. So I'm a big fan of, I guess, what they're calling egg of light. It's the idea of being completely encompassed by white light. I actually think this is one of the most underrated things witches learn. I am a big proponent of it. I believe being able to shield not only protects you, I think it's a good practice in protection. I think it teaches energy work, and I think it teaches will. And I think will is one of the biggest aspects of witchcraft. But there are a few different things you can try. There is the auric egg exercise. So this is an easy exercise that involves light visualization and aligning chakras. You breathe in and visualize expanding a warm light to your different chakra centers. And by the end, feel expansion and calm. This is possibly my favorite visualization when I need an energetic boost. There's the secret of the golden flower, which is a meditation technique that David Paul Kirkpatrick created from the papers and commentary of Carl Jung. Kirkpatrick describes the secret of the golden flower as an ancient esoteric practice that was transmitted orally for centuries before it was ever written down. It formulates a particular kind of meditation involving the circulation of light. It is not only the radiance found in the sun or moon, it is also the luminosity in our own eyes. Next is the zipper of light. This is a technique that Angie Fisher shared with this website when they interviewed her on their podcast. They say she practices this every night before bed and throughout the day when she's in low energy situations. She uses this as a way to protect herself when you know you're going into a situation where you may not have the best energy. Step one, imagine you have a shield around your energy field, like a solid ring of light being zippered tight around you with no holes in its boundary. Say to yourself, release anything that may have latched onto me that I have not taken on, that's not mine, and that doesn't serve me. Release it back to be recycled for the greater good. Then say to yourself, please bring back to me anything that may have lost or been lost for today or disconnected for some reason and is not in my energy field, and bring it back to me and make me whole and complete, or whatever feels good to you. These are great tools to have handy if you're an empath or you need to strengthen your light when you have to deal with difficult people. Most times we can't orchestrate the energy in every situation we're walking into, but we can prepare and make our light so strong it converts any low energies we come across. If you practice these daily for 10 minutes, you'll find yourself feeling more expansive and able to allow unwanted influences to pass right through. So, they do have a little section here called Real Talk. Being an empath is wonderful. Whenever a friend or family member needs support, I'm able to be there on a deeper emotional level. But there have been times where I don't know how to handle when a loved one feels anxious or angry. If a friend was anxious when I was anxious, if my dad was upset, I'd be upset. My happiness became tied to how happy or sad they were. I developed the habit of giving away my inner power like candy. Early on in my spiritual journey, this egg of light visual helped me in times of stress. When I entered a situation with anxious energy, I'd envision this egg of light gently enveloping me, breathing in its comforting effects, even if someone talked, I imagined a divide between us where their toxic energy dissipated as it hit the egg's barrier. So yeah, basically, I think those are really good tips. I'm a big fan of egg of light. I think I'm losing my voice. So thank you for everyone for putting up with me today. I'm really struggling. But I'm probably going to take a little bit of a break before we do tomorrow. So I'll sound better tomorrow. But I will link to this article in the witchpod.com link tree so you can visit it for more information. And they have a few different things you can try. I think it's a really great page. All right, witches. So we are wrapping up this episode of the Witch Daily Show. I want to give a shout out to listener Lillian. Lillian, you scrumptious, loyal, fae queen. Candace Cabell. Candace, you scrumptious, charming oracle. Elaine Gonzalez. Elaine, you innocent, scintillating banshee. And finally, Stephanie Pinion. Stephanie, you perfect, mystical fire dragon. Okay, before we leave, we do have a card pull today. Our card today is the Osusi from the Metaphysical Cannabis Oracle deck. Osusi is known as the Magician of the Forest. Shooting left-handed, he stands tall, drawing back an arrow on his bow. At his feet are forest plants, including the sacred cannabis plant. Osusi teaches that plants offer spiritual cleansing through herbal baths, jewelry, and remedies that can show us collectively and individually what the future may hold. His body is sculpted as a hunter and tracker with bright blue accents on his dark skin. The tips of his arrow are blue like lapis lazuli, along with the feather atop his head, an entire crown piece that sits with a large lapis on his third eye. Nature will provide symbols at every turn for you to gain more insight. All right, witches, that's all I've got for you today. If you have any questions, any books, decks, headline sources, anything we've mentioned today can be found in the podcast episode description or witchpod.com, and we will talk again tomorrow.
Witches, we hope you have a wonderful day, full of joy and gentleness and confidence. Links for this week's episodes, our website, Patreon, along with a free daily card pull can be found at witchpod.com. One stop for everything we talk about. Now, take one more deep breath and have a great day.
I had an abortion when I was 15 years old in my home state of Arizona in 1994. It was not a decision that I made lightly, but I have never for one moment doubted that it was the right decision for me. But so much has changed in Arizona and many other states since then. If I were that same 15-year-old in Arizona today, legally, I would have to get parental consent. I would be forced to undergo a medically unnecessary ultrasound, go to a state-mandated in-person counseling session designed solely to shame me into changing my mind, and then take a state-mandated 24-hour time out to make sure I really know what I wanted. And finally, I would be forced to give the state a reason why. Well, here is mine. It is my body, not the state's. Women and their doctors are the ones that are in the best position to make informed decisions about what is best for them. No one else. No bill that criminalizes abortion will stop anyone from making this incredibly painful decision. These bans will not stop abortion from happening, but they will drive women and girls and people into the shadows, which is what this has always been about, shaming and controlling women's bodies. In the week after I shared my story on my show, women were coming up to me in the street, in the supermarket, at my gym, with tears in their eyes, thanking me for my bravery. But the word brave didn't sit right with me. Why is it brave to speak to an experience that millions of people around the world throughout history have gone through? And then I realized it is considered brave because as women, we have been taught to feel shame about our bodies since birth. I am so sad that we have to sit here in front of a row of politicians and give deeply personal statements because the why doesn't matter. It should not matter. I am a human being that deserves autonomy in this country that calls itself free, and choices that a human being makes about their own bodies should not be legislated by strangers who can't possibly know or understand each individual's circumstances or beliefs. I'm here today to help destigmatize a legitimate medical procedure and continue to encourage women not to allow themselves to be shamed for their choices. And finally, I am here today for my two little girls, Birdie and Cricket, My dream for them is that they will live in a world in which women are truly equal with complete control over their own reproductive health. That is the dream I hold for all people, regardless of their privilege or parents or what state they live in. That dream is slipping further and further from reality with every ban passed. I hope that you, our elected leaders, can help us reverse the tide. Thank you. I look forward to today's discussion.